It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 593 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is the return of one of the favorites around here at the podcast, and that's creator-writer Alexander Bankita. There are some comics creators who are just a pleasure to talk with, and this week you'll hear my fun interview with Alex from Fright Comics as he talks about his new comic series, The Legion of Exceptional Gorilla Men and Rawhead Reborn. You should always expect the unexpected from Alex, since he's a master at throwing curveballs when it comes to his fast-paced scripts and relatable characters. He updates us on both these comics as well as other projects coming our way in the near future. Alex tells us how we can access these books during our interview, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's always great to talk with Alex Bankita, creator of such wonderful things as Captives. And what was the other one, that original one, Alex, that you did?
Champions of Earth.
That's right. That was actually, I liked that one even better than Captives, but for some reason the title eluded me. And you've got two books out right now, Alex, from American Mythology Productions. One is called Rawhead Reborn, and the other one is called The Legion of Exceptional Gorilla Man.
That's true. I do. They both came out May 31st. I'm very excited to have two books out in 1 week, which is pretty awesome. Published by American Mythology. They're great. I think they're both very different books. They're both out.
I would say, because... One is a horror book, and the other one is kind of one of those adolescent radioactive hamster type books.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a good comparison, actually. That's kind of what I was going for.
A Legion of Exceptional Gorilla Men, because it makes me think of that book. That book was created to have fun with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was itself
a parody.
Amalgamation of different trends in the comics industry. And then the best story I always like about that book was they did the first one and they sold enough and they thought, okay, that's it. And then all of a sudden Diamond contacted the creator and said, okay, where's issue two?
Yep. Oh, that's actually pretty funny. I didn't know Diamond hit them up.
He said, what, issue two? What do you mean issue two? And so they had to go back and figure it all out and come up with Fugitoid and all those crazy things. So
the Mirage became reality. That was their company, right? Like, oh, I guess we're real. We're a real company.
I guess we better keep going here. So they want more. So that's, they said.
That's funny. Obviously Ninja Turtles, clear inspiration. But really, I think I kind of summed it up to people as the Ninja Turtles meets the X-Men with an Adult Swim twist to it, like Adult Swim Cartoon Network twist to it. I think that's a good way to sum up the Legion of Exceptional Gorilla Men.
Okay.
But I'll let you, talk about it, and then I'll just kind of come in. Because you know me, I could talk nonstop, so let me... Okay.
That's a good thing. If you're a podcaster, you don't have to do all the talking. Because after a while, people get bored with you doing all the talking. So I'll ask questions and talk about it. But now, one of the things I noticed about the Gorilla Men one, you've got multiple covers. One, two, three, four, at least? Four or five?
Four covers.
Okay. Is that a mythology thing? American Mythology likes to do that? Or was that something you wanted to do? How did that happen?
That was American Mythology's thing. This book really exists because of American Mythology. I've actually originally pitched an idea for like a jungle story, and they were asking for pitches for like prehistoric based stories. I won't tell exactly why, because it's connected to a license. So I just started pitching a bunch of random ideas, and I just came up with this one that I thought was funny, where it was a bunch of gorillas find like some kind of meteor and they think it's food and they try to eat it. And then it turns out it gives them all superpowers. And then I just jokingly called it the Legion of, I called it the League of Exceptional Gorilla Men. And then the publisher is like, oh, that's really funny. We should do that. Let's call it the Legion of Exceptional Gorilla Men. And then it just kind of took off from there. And I give them a lot of credit. Like, my editor at American Mythology, slash the president of the company, I forget, James Kohorek, he's really good about just letting me kind of write ridiculous things. He kind of has, I think, a similar sense of humor. So, because when I started pitching some of these ideas for this book, you know, I think most publishers would be like, oh, no, that's weird. But he just went, no, that's funny. Do that. Let's run with that. So that book really is incredibly self-indulgent. It's a very self-indulgent book. I will say that.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell people what it's about? I mean, what's going on in the book?
The book is basically about these gorillas with superpowers. You don't really have enough time to get to know them that well because it's only one issue so far. But essentially, you have the book really, there's five gorillas in the Legion of Exceptional Gorilla Men, but two of them are captured. So the other three remaining gorillas are trying to save their like captured members. And then they're being held captured by this villain named Dr. Fang.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, the story just plays out from there. And I think what was really fun to me about writing this story and was important to me, and I'm glad the publisher was on board with it, was I didn't write the story from the perspective of these are a bunch of gorillas that act like people. I'm like, no, they act like gorillas who can talk. That's kind of how I approach the story. So, you know, at times they're very savage or they do things that are crazy. And they all have different personalities. Some of them can't speak. Some of them can speak. So I think that's kind of what maybe makes it different. Or because it seems to me when I read a lot of comic books that have gorillas that talk is they tend to act a lot like people who happen to be gorillas. But I kind of approach it the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the two that are captured looks like it's the Lump and Multi-Ape.
The Lump and Multi-Ape, yes. That's their names.
They're the ones that are captured. And Dr. Fang... There's a big reveal about Dr. Fang later on in the book.
That's true.
We won't talk about that.
Big twist.
Yeah. Do you remember the names of the other three?
Yeah, of course. Mighty Ape is the one with the sunglasses. He's kind of like energy based. He could like shoot beams out of his hands and stuff, and he could fly. And then there's Sharp Tooth. He's kind of like, I'd say, a direct inspiration for him is probably, I would say, Wolverine or Sabretooth. And then there's Overkill. He doesn't really have powers. He just has a gun.
Okay. That's right.
Yeah. But he really likes to shoot it, you know, and kill people. So.
Okay. Well, that's why he's called Overkill. He likes to overkill.
You read it. I think he certainly has his moment where he proves his name, why he's called that.
Mm-hmm. They're up against a bunch of robots initially, it looks like.
Robots and like stormtrooper looking guys, kind of. I actually shout out to the artist Gerardo Gamboni, amazing artist. And when he saw the script, he kind of asked me, he said, you know, these henchmen and these people, like, can I just fool around with this? And I gave him like kind of a loose idea. I said, this is kind of what I have in mind, but just go nuts. And he came up with some really cool designs and fun ideas. So a lot of that stuff was just him. You know, knocking it out of the park. So he did a great job.
And then, of course, they also come into scientists who don't fare very well.
No. That's actually probably one of my favorite parts of the book. I think that probably shows.
There's one that gets shot, and then there's all these body parts flying all over, and you see the head.
Yeah.
And there's a tongue hanging out of the head. So this might not be a good book for young children.
No. What's kind of funny about the book is it's rated T for teen. And I thought, I don't think so. I mean, like 18, like 17, like, I don't know if I'd want a 13-year-old reading it. I mean, it is drawn in a very cartoony style, to be fair, like a very, very good art, but it's like more on the cartoony side. So maybe that's okay. I don't know. But there is definitely a lot of very violent scenes, even on the first page.
Well, one of my favorite parts is all the scientists are standing there, and Overkill is aiming at them, and all of a sudden they go, ah, and they all run in different directions.
Yeah, that's really, really funny. And again, shout out to Gerardo, because there was a lot of stuff in that scene that, like, I kind of pictured in my head, and I didn't have to explain it. He just got it. I remember when I saw those drawings, I thought, man, this guy totally gets the joke. He gets the humor. He gets the pacing. I think there was literally one edit in that whole thing. And I was already getting ready for somebody to kind of screw up the comedic timing of it, but he just knocked it out of the park. Yeah, I literally, when I saw the art for that come in, I completely bursted out laughing. I was just like in my living room, and I was just kind of looking at it on my phone. I just broke out laughing. It's like, I was like, man, that's it. He totally nailed it.
So how did you find this artist?
It wasn't me. It was the publisher.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm just the writer, you know.
I wonder how they knew him. That's interesting.
I don't know. By the way, I'm recording outside, so if you hear police sirens and random noises, that's why.
So not coming for you or anything like that.
I don't think so.
Okay. So this is like a 37 issue, or, well, I guess what the covers page, probably 32 pages altogether.
Well, it's 32 pages, but I think the actual comic itself is only 25. And then there's like character sketches in there, and there's actually a preview of Rawhead Reborn, my other book, which is cool. And then what's cool is in Rawhead Reborn, the preview in the back of that is Legion of Exceptional Gorilla Men.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, cool. Each book is selling my other book, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
The funniest thing for me, this hit me the other day, for the character of Dr. Fang. I mean, obviously, like, one of my buddies read the comic and he said, so Dr. Fang is a parody of Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget and Dr. Doom, right? And I said, yeah, completely. Like, right out, I mean, you know, Dr. Fang has a little, like, wiener dog that sits on his lap, which is supposed to be a parody.
I was going to say he's not completely irredeemable. He likes dogs, and that's always a good
thing. That's true. He has like a, you know, instead of a, like Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget has a cat that he's always petting. So I was like, oh, this is funny. Make it a dog. But what was really funny was the other day I was watching, I won't give it away, but I was watching a 90s cartoon. And in the cartoon, there's like, it's like one of these cartoons where every episode, like the episodes are short. It's not like every episode is 30 minutes long. It's like, it'll be multiple short episodes. And there was a character in this one episode. And I said, oh my God, did I subconsciously take ideas from this when I watched this as a kid? Cause I watched it as an adult. I'm like, oh man, this is very similar to Dr. Fang. And my fun trivia thing is, if anybody actually can guess what it is, I'll give you a free signed copy of the comic.
Wow. Okay.
There you go. Shoot, if anybody wants to email in to Wayne, I will give you a free signed copy of like the black and white rare variant that's on me because it's so random. I'm like, I don't know if anybody will guess it, but if they do, it'll be hilarious.
Well, there's one thing that alludes back to the old Demetrius. Or Demetrius, I think that's the way he pronounces it, Demetrius. Justice League.
Really? If I did it, I did it subconsciously.
Oh, okay, because, when Dr. Fang laughs, wah-ha-ha-ha, which is a running gag in the Justice League comics that they wrote, that Keith Giffen and he wrote, whenever they laughed, they would laugh like that was a way out, you know, kind of outlandish laugh, and that's how they laughed.
Oh, interesting. You know, I did used to like to read a lot of Lobo, so maybe Keith Giffen, he did that, right?
Probably. Yes.
So I think, and I did used to read a lot of Justice League, so it's possible that it floated into my subconscious.
Well, but one of my favorite gags from that book was Spell or Die, and Lobo was there with his like his first grade teacher. And he has to spell, or he's going to get, or somebody's going to get shot. You know, he's going to shoot them, and he comes up with the word mnemonic, and the first letter is, M is silent,
right?
And so the person goes N, and bang, he says the letter, and he's done for. So
I don't think I've actually ever read that, but that sounds amazing. And I think I like that you brought that up, because to me that's the spirit of the Legion of Exceptional Gorilla Men. It's that kind of comic. Mm-hmm. It's like that kind of humor. Mm-hmm. I remember, like, when you read those old Lobo comics, And I remember particularly the cover for issue one or two. He has like a chainsaw in his hand, and he has some guy under his arm. He's punching in the face, and the guy looks ridiculous. He's like some kind of alien or something. And I thought, man, comics used to be so fun, right? Mm-hmm. Comics used to be fun. And I don't – I think I do – there's certain comics I kind of take pretty seriously, like Headless. Like when mm-hmm. I work on Headless, it actually is kind of emotionally and exhausting and mm-hmm. like mentally exhausting. But mm-hmm. when I work on Legion of Exceptional Grillmen, it's just like a breath of fresh air. And it's just fun and silly, and it's kind of like a nice little escape, which is like something else I also miss in comics. So, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff like that out there, but I find today comic book creators tend to take themselves very seriously.
Oh yeah.
And I would certainly do not. Like, I think it's people like comics went through this weird phase where people didn't want to say they read comics. They read graphic novels and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, no, I make comics. I don't call myself a graphic novelist or anything like that. And I mean, to be fair, there is a legitimate form of creator that is that. Mm-hmm. But overall, a lot of comics are not graphic novels. They're just collected volumes. I get it. I understand why that reaction came. But I would say at this point, I think people do take comics seriously as an art form. We can now just kind of relax and go back to being ridiculous and put mm-hmm. gorillas with superpowers and things again. It's mm-hmm. fun. It's funny. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with it.
I get a kick, though. One of the names of the scientist is Gibbons.
Yeah. That's
which great. Is, of course, a name of a gorilla type. So there's all kinds of a gorilla allusions and stuff. And I also like when the one scientist starts to go nuts and the boss, after he starts to get it together, thwack.
I literally laughed out loud when I wrote that. And that's actually kind of like my measurement as a writer. When I'm writing jokes, if I laugh when I write the joke, and then I laugh about it again later, like I'll just be standing around and I'll just start laughing because I remembered it and I still found it funny. I'll think that's a good joke. Like that probably works. If I still find it funny hours later. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that part actually cracked me up. And I was surprised I got through because I remember writing that in the script and thinking, is this too stupid? Is this too ridiculous? Am I going to get an edit note for like, Alex, you're going too far? Nope, that was totally fine. and then Gerardo like made it even funnier. Like, the way he drew it made it even funnier mm-hmm. than the way I wrote it.
Well, what about the computer? I mean, the gorilla unplugs the computer.
Oh, that cracks me up.
System online. Did you write this? Because it says loading. It's a system. We'll be back online shortly. Thank you for your patience, which is actually what some computer software says.
I totally wrote that. Yes.
I laughed when I saw that. I said, my gosh. That sounds like my Windows. You know, my Windows does that all the time.
Well, like I said to you earlier, I used to work in tech support.
Mm.
So that was kind of the joke there, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was like, anybody who has to deal with stupid computer problems, I think that whole scene with Overkill probably laughed out loud or really found it amusing. I totally.
Yeah.
And I give a lot of credit to, again, the publisher, because they believed in this book right away. Mm-hmm. And they just said, this is funny. It has a good title. It's goofy. Let's go with it. Let's run with it. So I'm happy it's out there. Hopefully we get to make more. Mm-hmm. We'll see, but I hope so.
This could be a cartoon series on, what do you call it? On Cartoon Network, the what is
Adult
it? The
Swim? Late Night.
Yeah, Adult Swim. This would be perfect for Adult Swim.
I think so. And also, it's funny you say late night. You know, now that I'll tell it to this podcast listener, this is podcasting after hours because it's like 10:30 at night. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Wayne was nice enough to accommodate my ridiculous schedule. You guys are listening to us sleep deprived or possibly tired late at the end of the day. I'm like at half my energy level, which is probably good. So I'm not too ridiculous.
Well, there's one page, I think, like, well, of course, but the covers I can't tell. But there's this one page where Overkill shoots the boss. And
yeah.
Glasses go forward, but the brain goes flying backwards, and the eyes are kind of flying around separate from all that. And I was like, ew, you know, you want to get a reaction. You don't necessarily want people to laugh all the time. But, you know, when I saw that, I went, ew. And, of course, I reacted. And that's, I think, what you want. You don't necessarily want everybody to be laughing all the time. You want them to have be startled at things like that too. So
sure, especially because it's a page turn, I believe. I think it's you turn the page when you see that shot.
That's
I don't
right.
remember.
It's the top of the page. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the top. And this is something that I think maybe some people don't realize, but when you write comics, you do sometimes think about, okay, if the book, if this is on the left side of the book and you want something to kind of be a surprise, you want it to be a page turn.
Right.
I did the same thing with Headless season 2 issue 1 when Tom kills that guy. It's a page turn. It's like oh, and then just suddenly he's like, spoilers, if no one's ever read Headless season 2 issue 1, he's a zombie. And it's like this sudden reveal that he's a zombie, and it's like, and then he kills him. Because if you put it on the left side of the page, or the right side, I'm sorry, no, it is on the left side, I apologize, it's a page turn. You have to put it on the first page. If you put it on the right page, when somebody's reading the book, they're naturally going to look to the right, and they're going to spoil what you set up. So that's what I actually really like about Comixology's reading, because it's kind of nice that you don't know what's going to happen next panel, which I like when it does panel to panel in Comixology. I really like reading like that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people there's some people who absolutely love digital comics, and some people who just absolutely hate it. And
I like both. I don't have a dog in this fight. What's funny is I find I actually, for physical books, I buy indie books physical. I buy mainstream books digital. Because, I mean, this is going to sound messed up, but your average mainstream book is not going to ever really be a collectible. I mean, unless right. there's a first appearance of a character or something. But it's like, I have random Batman issue 855. I'm like, do I really need this taking up space in my house? You know, but if it's like an indie book, I'm like, oh, you never know. Like, I remember I bought a lot of The Walking Dead when it first came out. I don't know if I've talked about this on the show before. Probably. I've told so many people about this, because I think it's the first time I ever made a lot of money in comics. And like, I bought like a bunch of early Walking Dead issues, and then I sold them, and I made like a good amount of money. But you know, all my mainstream Marvel and DC books I bought from that time, they're not worth anything. Because you know, it is what it is. It's like it's issue 700 or whatever of Superman. It's like, it's not really. So I don't like to. I'm kind of like, I've become more self conscious about space as I've gotten older with collecting comics. So for me, like, I don't like filling my long boxes with books that I could like throw out any moment. I remember. So I moved to Miami from Seattle, and I threw so many comic books away. Because I just didn't want to transport them, because they take up so much space.
And they're heavy.
And all this stuff I threw out was like mainstream stuff and licensed stuff. I was like, okay, well, this isn't worth anything. Like, maybe the stuff I threw out will be worth something one day. But I probably threw out 90% of my books, and almost all of them were like mainstream books. Cause I'm like, it's taking up too much space in my house. And now all those same books I'll read digitally. You know what digital is really great for? Reading old omnibuses of stuff. That's my favorite thing to do with a digital, because they're so darn cheap.
See, I use digital to get – if I've missed a paper copy of something.
Yeah, that's good too.
Because sometimes the store that I go to, mainly if she doesn't get in the book and doesn't come in a week or two, I am not likely going to get a paper copy of that.
Yeah.
And then what I have to do is I buy the digital copy so I can read that, and then I have some idea what's going on when the next issue shows up.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's what I do.
My thing too is like, I also buy digital books to try books out. Like if a book comes out and I'm on the fence about it, and usually with digital, sometimes it'll be like a dollar cheaper. So I'll give it a shot, and I'm like, oh. And then I'll decide whether or not I'll actually want to buy the physical copy of it. But I really do like buying giant omnibuses digitally, because they take up so much. Again, space. I don't have that much space in my place. Maybe that's part of the issue. Like I love the Dark Horse Conan books, the Kurt Busiek Conan book. I love it. And I used to have all of it, but I don't live all those books are in my parents' house in Brooklyn. So I said, I'm not going to buy like – all these giant Conan books, which are 500 pages long. I just bought them all digitally. And I think I read like three of them already. All the Dark Horse Star Wars books from back in the day. I love those books. And I bought a ton of those omnibuses as well. So that stuff I really, really like digital for.
Let me ask you one thing before we get into the other book. Is this because Dr. Fang kind of says, he gets to a place where he's saying that his plan isn't over yet.
Yes.
And then he starts to laugh and the dog is sitting there. And I'm kind of going, wait a minute, is that the end? His plot's not over. Do you have plans for more of these?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I ended it in a way that I felt like it has an ending. But I left it open. And it's funny you say that because I brought that book to my job. And a lot of my coworkers read it. And these are people who never read comics, which is always fun. I always like seeing reactions from people who never read comics, read a comic. But I think what's nice about the book is because it's about a bunch of gorillas with superpowers, it's actually very accessible to people who don't read comics. Like one of my coworkers, you know, I don't think he's ever read a comic book in his life. No, he has, but like very few. And I told him about the book. He's like, oh my God, gorillas with superpowers. I want to read that. Like, it's just simple. And, but one of my coworkers said to me, did you plan on making more of this? Because is this over? Like, what's the deal? And I said, well, that's a good response. You know, I mean, if everybody wants more, just, you know, buy more of the book and email the publisher and say, I want more.
Well, it's a fun book. I really enjoyed it. You should have put a question mark. It says end period. If you'd have put a question mark there, that would have been.
Damn letter.
That would have been good because this book is so, you know, you talk about, this is 180 degrees away from the other book. It's called Rawhead Reborn. Yeah. Why don't you talk a little bit about this? And I do, before you do that, I'm going to say, I actually had to look up and see what a rawhead was. I had not heard of it before.
Monster.
Why don't you explain to people what a rawhead is?
Well, rawhead is also called rawhead and bloody bones. It's like an old folklore monster. That's really it. It has a really cool look. Actually, Rawhead and Bloody Bones was two characters in an issue of Hellboy. They were in an arc of Hellboy as well. But yeah, Rawhead is kind of like this obscure folklore monster that is super cool. And again, the publisher just wanted to do a story about Rawhead. And I pitched for it and they liked it. But actually what's cool is that my original pitch, my editor came in and said, this is good, but I think it would be better if you changed it into something more like this. And then I kind of took that and ran with it. And I actually really like the way this story came together, to be honest, because when I wrote it the first time, I didn't really feel like it was up to my standard of what I like. But then as I saw it, like kind of, I don't know, when it was finished, I remember reading the script and thinking, this is pretty good. And then when I actually saw the art with it, I said, oh, this is pretty good. I really like this. This is really good. Like, I think the artist did a good job of, or maybe when I got to visually see it, it kind of really came together. And I'm getting a very good reaction for that book, which I wasn't expecting. Yeah, it seems like it's getting a good response from people. So,
well, it's horror, and it's horror in the most horrific way.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times horror is more suspense. This is not suspense.
No.
This is horror. It starts right out on July 17th, 1995, and somebody is – there's several bodies on the floor, and there's one guy laying there, and he says, he's going to get you. I'll make sure of that.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's where you're starting. And as soon as you start to, what? Wait a minute. Who's going to get you? What's all that? And then they get into the Rawhead legend, which I found interestingly was described online as a skull stripped of skin that bites its victims.
Yeah, it's disturbing.
Yeah, right. As soon as I read that, I thought, this is real. So that starts out really well. And of course, the police who come in and find the bodies and stuff like that, and the guy, you know, passes on right in front of them, they are not very happy people when they see all this stuff. And then it bounces forward. And one of the things I never like, and the thing that just horrifies me, is the thing we see on the second page. There's a guy, and he's been killed, and he's been killed in a very horrific way.
Yeah.
And
true.
I don't know if I should spoil it, but let's just say his head leans back, and his tongue hangs way out.
Yeah.
And that's to give you an idea of what's happened. And it looks like it's the same police officers, right?
It's the same guy, yeah. It's the cop from the past. That's him in the future.
Yeah, and everybody who sees this guy and how he's died is just, and I'm kind of like, eh. See, that's the horror part about it.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny. I find, especially like lately, I think almost a lot of my comics work is horror or supernatural. But what I think a lot of people probably don't know about me is horror movies creep me out. So it's kind of, I mean, I'll watch them, but in general, for most of my life, I think they've always kind of creeped me out. But now I find as I've gotten older and I get to write them, I actually really enjoy writing them. And I find I kind of like to spend time on trying to figure out how to put like a graphic image at a certain place and pop something. And I give a lot of credit to the artist because he nailed it. I mean, it was disturbing when you saw it. Like, he nailed it. And and what's interesting too is that I remember with the first issue of Headless, it opens with Rick, one of the main characters, finding two kids stuffed into a refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the way it's drawn, it's graphic and it's disturbing if you look at it because like the body parts don't line up right, so you have to assume mm-hmm. somebody chopped them in half. But you don't really mm-hmm. see it, you know. You don't mm-hmm. see anything really gross. Mm-hmm. You just know there's something gross in that fridge. But with this, I'm like, no, this is a mature book. Like, we're not going to pull our punches here. So.
It's interesting because the cover, well, I guess it's the cover, so it's not a spoiler to say. The cover has this body and all these, looks like people's heads are poking out of the body.
Yeah.
And this huge tongue is all over the place. That, I guess that's the rawhead. Of course, as soon as I see that, I know as far as our core goes, we're in trouble. Because yikes. And then we get to another cover where there's like a female.
Yeah.
Poking out.
I would say the cover, the mature cover, mm-hmm. the racy cover is actually mm-hmm. much more accurate to what Rawhead looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Cause the main cover, he doesn't really look like that. Mm-hmm. His powers are similar. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think it's a huge spoiler, but, you know, Rawhead kind of has, the way I approached it, like a similar vibe to John Carpenter's The Thing.
Hmm.
I kind of looked at it from that perspective, and I think the artist really understood that. So I kind of ran with it. I remember when I pitched that idea, my editor was like, that's really disturbing. I like that. That's unsettling. Yeah. So, but we went with it.
Well, when we get into the story, the two police officers are going to check out a problem. They get stuck in traffic, and so they get there kind of late. And when they get there, they see a woman kind of leaning back on this counter.
Yeah.
And when we see what's really going on,
it's disturbing. That's
horror.
It's disturbing. Do you know who Junji Ito is?
Mm-mm.
Junji Ito is a manga artist, and he's notorious for writing, they call it body horror.
Oh.
And I guess the idea behind body horror is that you see something that's physically horrific. And I'd say in the past few years, I really kind of like Junji Ito's work. And I heard somebody describe his work as the stories he writes are not as much about the characters as they are about the thing that's disturbing or horrific about the story. And I think that's kind of true about this story. I mean, the characters matter, especially one character in particular, you find out in the end, but it's more about the body horror elements of it.
Yeah. Cause the tongue reaches out and, there's something really nasty as far as that goes.
Yeah.
And then of course they try shooting it and the bullets don't seem to have a whole lot of effect on them.
No, but I mean, but when do bullets ever work in horror movies?
that's the trick. You know, everybody thinks the gun is the ultimate answer, and often it's not. So, and then we get to,
it's hard not to spoil it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause let's just say a certain kind of costume appears near the end.
Yeah.
That is many people don't like. Yeah, we say. And that's when we find out the surprise at the end.
Yeah.
I don't want to surprise it because let's just say that it's pretty horrific.
yeah. I actually really like the ending a lot, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I remember when I wrote it, I didn't write it that way the first draft. Mm-hmm. But when I kind of redone it, originally I had it broken down as two issues. But then mm-hmm. when I broke it down into one, I changed the story around and I came up with that ending, and I thought, ooh, I really like this ending. I'm very into this ending. So,
like, this is a horror book. Like I said, it's not suspense. Although there is some suspense involved as to what's actually completely going on, which we don't find out until we get to that latter part.
And I will say this. I think I keep trying to make this rule that I'm going to stop writing jokes in certain books, because I think it's obvious if you read Headless and Champions of Earth, and even probably not in Captives. I really like writing humor, and I think sometimes I lean on it as a crutch as a writer sometimes. Maybe I wouldn't use the word crutch, but it's my comfort zone. So when I wrote this, I tried very hard not to write anything funny, but I do think there's one part that's actually kind of funny. When one of the cops is kind of ignorantly asking about his sick days. I don't remember that part. I thought that was kind of funny, actually. And then I wrote it. I was like, damn it. Am I supposed to write jokes? And then I thought, but it kind of ties into the ending, so I'm going to leave it.
Yeah, because oh gosh.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize this stuff actually like bothered you so much. Now I feel bad for sending it to you.
No, it's okay. It's a comic. I'm better reading a comic than I am watching a horror movie, especially if it's a really good horror movie where the effects actually are believable.
Yeah.
If they're not believable, I'm perfectly fine watching. Oh, brother. I sit there and go, but if they are believable, I have trouble with it. But I can endure a comic much more because my imagination is engaged, but it's not like it's a comic. It still is not necessarily real in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's not real. It's not connected to reality. It's in your hands or on your screen.
Yeah. I don't like. See, this is why I don't like certain characters or certain like real people in comics, because to me this is not real. I'm looking at it, I'm enjoying the story part of it, but I'm not necessarily. It doesn't necessarily always hit me as real,
right?
Which I'm okay with. They'll write stories about real people like political figures and stuff like that. And I'll be looking at it and I'll be going, I don't buy that. I don't think that's true.
I think it's sorry, a bug just flew in my face. Let's see if it comes back. I think something for me is I don't like when stories kind of break the fourth wall a little bit with characters looking too real or people. You ever see the movie? I think it's Ocean's 13. It's like the second Ocean's 12 movie. There's a part in the movie where the characters don't know what to do, and Julia Roberts plays one of the characters, and they make it in the script that Julia Roberts' character pretends that she's Julia Roberts, the actress, to get out of a certain scenario. And I thought, that's the stupidest, laziest, dumbest. I remember that moment. I was like, somebody got paid to write that. But I think, again, though, it goes back to, if something is fiction, it's fiction. And I don't like when people slap real characters or real things in it because it takes you out of the scenario. Like I always never liked the fact that Nick Fury looks like Sam Jackson in the comic, The Ultimates. I've always hated that. Like it's stupid. He's a real, and there's a part in the comic where they talk about, you know, if there was an Avengers movie, who would play you? And then, you know, Nick Fury says Sam Jackson, of course. I'm like, that's stupid. I hate that. That's stupid.
Lazy.
It's lazy. It's lazy.
Yeah. See, there's certain movies and stuff. You can tell when a movie's bad is when I get pulled out of the movie and I'm sitting in the theater watching the movie. And there was I always point to Rocky IV. Somebody talked me into going to see Rocky IV, and he's in the middle of the Soviet Union at that time. And he beats this guy all jacked up on drugs and all kinds of stuff. And in the middle of the Soviet Union, they put a live microphone in front of him. And the moment that happened, I went, whoop, and I'm in the theater watching the movie going, nope, there's no way in this world, in the Soviet Union, they're going to give this guy in America and they're going to put a live microphone in front of him.
See, you know, it's funny you say that because I saw that movie after the Soviet Union had collapsed. So for me, I actually didn't even notice that. But I think this is, you're right. I've never even thought about that. But I guess I was too away from it to realize mm-hmm. that would never happen.
Yeah. Right. To me, it's one of those things that pulls you out of the movie and suddenly you're sitting in the theater going, oh, nuts. No, I'm not in the movie anymore. And that's what happened with that. And sometimes in the comics, particularly if I see, and some artists like to draw Patrick Stewart in every comic they do for some reason. And I look at it and they go, wait a minute, that looks like Patrick Stewart. No, I'm not into this book anymore. I'm right out.
Yeah, it's the only time I don't feel that way is, have you ever heard of an anime called Space Adventure Cobra?
Mm-mm.
There's a very famous French actor from the time, like from the 60s or 50s. I'm going to butcher his name. I think it's Belmondo. I don't remember. Okay. But okay. Space Adventure Cobra looks exactly like him with blonde hair. And he has a very distinct nose. It's like kind of a roundish nose. It's like kind of part of the way he, you know, his signature look. But I watched Space Adventure Cobra first, and I didn't even know who he was. Mm. And then I found out years later, oh, there's this famous actor from the 60s in France, in the 70s. And I thought, oh, that's cool. But again, it's because I wasn't aware of it as I was reading it or watching the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, that's, I would agree with you. I don't know how we went on that tangent, but I agree with you.
Well, that's okay. Well, now I got to ask a question. Rawhead Reborn. You said you had more stories for the Grill book. What about this book? Are we good? Do you have more Rawhead stories that you have in mind?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's up to the publisher, but I don't know. This one seems like it's sold. I mean, they're both like both of these books, to be honest, are actually kind of hard to find in stores, which is always a classic problem of indie book in general. Mm-hmm. Indie books don't get a lot of orders. But Rawhead was like selling out almost instantly.
Hmm.
It was like the moment, I remember the moment it dropped, like I could only find maybe one store that had it. And it still is the case that I think Midtown Comics actually, I give a lot of credit to Midtown Comics. They've always been good to me. They ordered a lot of copies of Headless when it came out. And now from what I'm seeing, like a lot of their comics, like Legion of Exceptional Gorilla Men, like, I think one of the variants sold out almost instantly, and then Rawhead sold out like instantly, and now it's back in stock. So I thought, oh, well, they ordered more copies. That's cool. So shout out to them. But Rawhead Reborn, I get the vibe that people who like it really like it because it's tough to find. Maybe two part of it too is because it has multiple covers, but like the other cover is like a mature cover.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is like a century cover. And then they created a fourth cover for the publisher's website. But I think because of that standard cover is like the main cover most people would buy, it's actually pretty hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
I found a review of that book on this one website, just like a website where people kind of collect comic books, and some community person left a review. And he said something along the lines of, I've never read a book from this publisher. A lot of people, only one of my local comic book shops even carries this publisher. And I read it and I was really surprised at how much I liked it. And I thought, that's nice. Like, that's good. So, yeah, I think the people who are really into it, like really into that kind of stuff, seem to like it a lot. You know, from the outside looking in, I don't know. I'm just looking at what I'm seeing online.
Well, see, now your argument question, if people have trouble finding it, how can they get a hold of it? I mean, if they get a hold, is that like a website for the company?
Yeah.
How does this work?
So I would say for both books, the easiest place to find both books is the publisher's website, which is American Mythology. I think it's AmericanMythology.net. If you type in American Mythology Comics on Google, it'll come up. But if you want to actually buy your comics from a comic book store, I'd say Midtown Comics is your best bet. Because they restocked both of them. Because I remember, I had friends asking me where to buy the book, and a lot of my friends like to buy comics, like more so from comic book stores. So I was running out of options. And then Midtown Comics restocked. So MidtownComics.com is your best bet if you want to buy from like a comic book store. But if you want to buy from the publisher, it's AmericanMythology.net. I think you just type in American Mythology Comics, it'll come up.
Okay. Yeah,
they have everything. And they have this special exclusive Rawhead cover. Actually, the Rawhead cover they have on their website is really disturbing. I actually like it a lot. I kind of wish it was a main cover. It's really good.
Okay. What else are you working on right now? Are there other books that you're working on? Are you still working on Headless?
Headless is – I'm trying to find a way to say this. Something's in motion.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Something is in motion.
Okay.
but I will always, on some level, be working on Headless. I love that book. It's my, me and Robert's like first book, really. Well, I'm sure Robert had books before that, actually, but it's like my first like outing being published. Headless, there's things are rolling. So there's probably going to be an announcement for that, I hope.
Okay.
And then I have another book I'm working on. I can't announce yet. It's like in development. It's in production. I'll say I'm working on with Robert and Robert Ahmad, co-creator of Headless. And then I think I have a few more projects in the works with American Mythology that haven't been published yet, like things I've written that I've seen the art for. Actually, there's another project I wrote with Gerardo. I wrote that Gerardo drew, the artist who did Legion of Exceptional Gorilla Men. American Mythology puts out these really cool anthologies called, they put out multiple, but the one I tend to get a lot of work on is Beware the Witch's Shadow, which is kind of like a Tales from the Crypt book. And it has like usually has 2 to 3 stories per issue. And I have like a bunch of unpublished stories for those collections. And I've seen 2 that the art's already done. The lettering is done. So those will be coming out. So just keep an eye out for Beware the Witch's Shadow. And then I'm working on a book with Robert, and something with Headless is rolling. I don't know why I think of a head rolling when I say that. No pun intended. That's what people look at it. Stuff is definitely, and I have another book that, you know, I used to keep this quiet, but I'm not going to keep it quiet anymore. I have a book that's like stuck in a contract with Action Labs. I'm just waiting for them to go bankrupt so I could put it out.
And, wow, I haven't seen Action Lab put out a book in I don't know how long.
I've always tried to be polite and not like bash a company, but they've been treating me so bad. I'm just not going to be polite about it anymore. They're awful. Like the way they structure their contracts. When the book is in production until it's finished, you know, they own it pretty much. And this book, my buddy and I were working on for a while, you know, it kind of hit a speed bump, and then Action Lab was imploding. And like, they just disappeared. Like all our editors just vanished, and like everybody just vanished. And then I've contacted them probably like 6 or 7 times now, or maybe 5, whatever, a lot. And emails bounce back. And then when you finally find an email that works, they just don't respond. I keep telling them, like, just let me out of my contract. Like, they got hit with a lawsuit? Did you know that?
No.
They got hit with like a huge lawsuit. All these creators came out at the same time and were like, this company treats us like crap. They don't pay us properly. You know, and they lock people's IPs into their contracts, which is what they've done to me. So I have another book that's like half finished. That's been stuck in this contract for years.
Wow.
So it sucks. Part of me just wants to put it out and be like, what are they going to do? Sue me? Like, but you know, it is what it is. It sucks.
Well, that's too bad. Cause I used to see Action Lab at cons all the time, but I haven't seen her. I haven't seen anything they put out or even heard of them.
They're essentially bankrupt at this point. They can't even take submissions anymore.
Oh wow!
They don't have a website anymore. Pretty much, they've fallen off of social media. Every editor that's worked for them is gone. Funny enough, the person who accepted my first idea that I got published at Action Lab ended up going over to Scout.
Oh!
And I remember talking to them and saying, "Do you remember you actually were like the submission person who picked up my other book?" And she goes, "Yeah, I do." I said, "What is going on with this company?" She goes, "Oh, you know, they're all like vanishing. It's rough." So. Yeah, and Action Lab at this point, they're just like, I have this theory that they know they're just going to declare bankruptcy once this lawsuit is done. So they're just kind of letting the thing run, you know, but they can't even take submissions anymore. So, I mean, I don't even know why they haven't just called it a day. Like, basically, in a nutshell, if they lose this lawsuit, they're going to owe a lot of people a lot of money. I don't know how they're going to pay it. So I think they know they're going to just declare bankruptcy. So my co-creator and I, they put this book together. We're just waiting for them to go bankrupt at this point.
Oh, wow. Yikes. Well, if people want to keep track of what you're doing, Alex, how do they do that in social media?
They don't, because I don't use social media.
Well, do you have a newsletter or anything?
I have frightcomics.com is my website. I would like to pretend I update it regularly, but I don't. But if you do email me on there, I have a newsletter, but I never send that out anymore either. So I guess the best way to keep up with me is just follow my publishers. Just follow Scout, follow American Mythology. And you know what's weird is in my head, I kind of like it like that. Like, I'd rather people follow my work because they happen to find it at a store and go, oh, this guy's good. Because that's how it used to be, right? Like, you used to go to a comic book store and notice that you keep reading these books from this guy that you like. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, I don't know, I kind of like that. There's something about social media I can't put my finger on it that I really dislike. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like comic book people being on it. No, that's not true. I don't know. I can't find a way to put it. But anyway, and also, you know what is too? I don't use it. And I think if you actually are using social media properly, you have to actually spend a lot of time on it. Mm-hmm. And I hate spending time on it. So that's why I just said to myself, what's the point of putting out one post every 6 months? Not use it.
Which of the publishers again? You mentioned there's Scout, there's
American Mythology. I don't know, just keep your eyes out. There could be more.
Okay. Okay. All right. Sounds good. Well, Alex, it's always great fun to talk with you, and it keeps up. And why don't you go ahead and mention the name of the books again?
The Legion of Exceptional Gorilla Men and Rawhead Reborn, both published by American Mythology on May 31st. So if your store still has a copy, you know, go pick one up. If not, you can try out midtowncomics.com, or you could try out American Mythology's website. They definitely have it.
All right. Well, I've got to read them, and they're both really good. This is a genuine horror book, Rawhead Reborn is. And the other one is 180 degrees the other way, which is a lot of fun. It's great to be able to read somebody who can write different genres and styles and do it well. So I have to congratulate you on that.
It's really nice of you to say. I appreciate that, because I think I try really hard to do that as a writer. I know we're wrapping up. I'll say this really quick. I used to have a coworker who was trying to be an actor, and he said to me, a good actor can play any part. And I thought to myself, I want to be like that as a writer. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to just be a guy who writes comedy or this or horror or that. I want to be able to write anything, you know? And if you understand the fundamentals of what makes a story good, you should be able to write a good story for the most part out of anything. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I strive to do. So I'm glad you said that, because it's really nice of you to say that. It's something I really think about a lot.
Well, I think you do it very well, Alex. So I'm looking forward to more stuff from you in the future.
Well, I really appreciate that. Thank you, Wayne. Always good to be on. I appreciate the support.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time when we'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.